everyone. Welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Friday, June the 8th, 2012. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com. Joining me this week, as always, the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, what's going on?
Oh, not much. It's about to rain out here in Denver, and it's...
It certainly is.
We saw some ridiculous storm clouds earlier in the night. Before Denver got covered with the dark clouds, like, off to the east, you can still see, you know, the sun breaking through, and there's these gigantic mountains of clouds. Like, you know, the kind that you'd expect someone to, like, do a dramatic painting of or hear inspirational music in the background or something when you look at them. It was pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah, and that storm is still just to the southeast of it. It's pretty crazy. It's just, like, sitting on top of southeast metro area right now. Crazy stuff.
The last 20 minutes, it just started thundering out here.
Mm-hmm. And then for the first time in a month, pretty much, we have everybody back on with us. Paul is here as well. Paul, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. I'm back from Jamaica. I'm tan. I'm happy. That's about it.
Are you happy to be back doing the podcast?
I missed it a little bit. A tiny bit. I missed Andrew's quick-paced stream of conscious talking. It's been so long since I've heard them on a podcast.
What did we talk about last week?
Dude, like, what didn't we talk about last week, man? Probably Dexter Fowler in the rotation. That's all we ever talk about.
Maybe Nolan Arenado in there.
I don't think we mentioned him. I would have been too angry.
Aw.
I gotta be so angry.
Pooply, don't be angry.
Okay, so we have a lot to talk about, or not. I'm not sure which. We'll decide later. Let's talk about Jeff Francis first, because I know we can get conversation out of that. He was with part of Cincinnati's organization, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
At the time, yeah. He
just asked for his release.
Yeah, well, he had a an out clause. Like, when you're not on the 40-man roster by X date, you can request to be you can sort of elect to either stay or leave, and he elected to leave. So he is now a free agent. Yes, that's the term I was thinking of.
Interestingly enough, Aaron Cook, who has signed a minor league deal with the Red Sox, was also at that 40-man or let-me-go point just recently, and now he's hurt again.
Well, yeah, they called him up so he could so they would have him in their rotation because their rotation was struggling, and then, like, after what, like, one start or something, he went on the disabled list.
Figure that the Rockies are, like, crawling back to all these pitchers they used to have. Like, take us back! Take us back! Oh, no! We miss you!
I don't know. I'd take Aaron Cook on a non-two-figure salary like we were getting close to.
Non-two-figure? Oh, you mean... But two figures. I'd give him
sign Aaron Cook for $50. I mean double digit millions is what I'm trying to say.
That would be too much, right?
So. Yeah, well, I'm saying that, like, the biggest issue with Cook in comparison to his performance was he was too expensive because we signed him long term after that I guess it was his 2008 season, and he had that contract option, and even if he were pitching well, they were never going to have him pitch for that amount of money. And so, I mean, now that he's signed to, like, a reasonable amount of money, I wouldn't be opposed to it. But let's focus on Francis, because that's actually a possibility at this point. Obviously, because our starting rotation is in shambles right now, and half of it is either hurt or ineffective or some such, or now pitching for the Orioles, we have some openings, and I don't know, guys. What do you think about the idea of bringing Francis back?
I'm okay. Honestly, it's one of those things where you want to hover around 50, with, you know, 100 being I'm all for it and 0 being I'm all against it. You hover around 50, but you could, like, I could be persuaded to 55, 60, 45, 40, you know, just, you know, convince me, talk me into this.
I don't really have an opinion on it.
I'm just saying to the, you know, person trying to talk me into this. Yeah, no, I'm easily right. Swayed on this issue. The thing is that, like, we're not just, you know, trying to get a guy to give us 200 innings anymore. It's the fact that Jeremy Guthrie might be gone soon. And
what are they going to do to him? Just trade him? Because I don't think they're going to just let him go. they might put him in the bullpen like they did with Hamill.
Well, okay, let me rephrase that then. Guthrie's rotation spot is going to be open.
Gotcha.
Soon-ish, I get the feeling. I mean, there's nothing really on it except for the fact that he's been terrible lately. But, you know, why not give an old fan favorite, you know, a chance there? Because, I mean, if you think about it, Francis will really be taking Jamie Moyer's spot.
Well, or more accurately, Juan Nicasio's spot.
Yes, that too.
Because
either way.
We called it Moscoso when Nicasio was put on the DL, but he's been, at least yesterday, pitched out of relief as a long relief type.
Terribly.
He did his job, though. He saved our bullpen for today when we had five inning outman start, so we had the rest of the bullpen behind him.
I mean, he did the job as far as that goes. I'm not so much saying that in, like, the intangible, like, you know, you got the job done, son. You know, once you get past that, like, he got good strikeout numbers and then gave up another three runs over four innings, I think it was. And, you know, frankly, I just... You got to start impressing at some point, kid.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is why I think I don't believe the team intends to keep him in a role other than long relief, at least for right now. They might send him back down at some point if we actually do end up signing Francis or some such. But I haven't really thought too hard about the idea of Francis, but I'm curious for both of you, but for you, Andrew, especially, because you were talking about how you're somewhere in the middle right now. Like, what factors here are really, do you feel are important in determining whether or not it's a good move?
Well, do we think that he's going to be at least what we were hoping Jeremy Guthrie was going to be? And we don't need him to be amazing the entire season. Just can he give us another 20 starts or however many are left for him this season and expect him to give us six innings a game, you know, by hook or by crook? And, you know, if he can meet that, and you know, it looks like it just from, I mean, his AAA numbers are AAA numbers, obviously, but there's going to be more going for him.
They look pretty good.
Yeah.
How, I haven't looked at him, so I don't know. What do they look like?
He struck out, so it's 77 innings. He struck out 7.5 per nine, walked 2 per nine. His home run rate was under 1 per nine, and I don't have his ground ball information here. I could probably bring that up, though. But, I mean,
the
you know.
The kind of stands, though. Very passable pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sure. The type of thing, you can see him come up to the major leagues, and even if stuff gets worse by a little bit, he could still be effective. So.
Yeah.
And you think about it, the reason that I'm, like, against the idea of it is because why not just give Tyler Chatwood those innings? Why not just, you know, put Drew Pomeranz up here and say, look, dude, we're gonna make this happen. You know, you don't got to worry about the results because we're not worrying about the results anymore. Let's just get through innings and see what you can learn.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of changeover still. And I mean, one other thing that we could talk about here is we have De La Rosa with another setback. We don't know how we don't really have a timetable at this point on when he's going to be able to start rehab again. And even when he begins, he's still got, you know, 3 to 4 more starts in there probably before they're comfortable sending him up here. So we still have the like forthcoming De La Rosa replacement.
Yeah, I mean that really I think is what opens the door for it. Otherwise, it would be kind of confusing. Unless you just wanted to send him as more AAA depth, but I think with De La Rosa's injury, aside from Nicasio's injury now, like you could really make an argument that like we're going to need somebody at some point, and I would probably just defer to the organization's judgment that like mm-hmm. that somebody is not Chatwood or Pomeranz, it's for a good reason.
Yeah, and I think that reason right now is they're still not throwing innings right now. They're throwing, you know, 4 to 6 per start, 6 at the max. Yeah. Chatwood certainly is, and I don't know if Pomeranz has even reached 6 innings actually since going back down. And I mean, obviously they're trying to limit the innings on one level intentionally because as I keep mentioning here, he does not have the length in terms of pitching a full pro season yet. He's never experienced anything like that. So I think that the reason they sent him down in the first place was less related to struggles and more like, well, okay, it's pretty clear right now you're going to be a 5-inning pitcher most of the time. We would rather have you being a 5-inning pitcher for the Sky Sox than here because every time you do that, our bullpen's tired the next day and proceeds to explode. So I can understand why they wouldn't be keen on immediately recalling Pomeranz. I mean, and obviously it gets back into that whole, like, you should have the best players on your team mentality. But I mean, if they don't work the way they should work to make the team stable, then I can see a legitimate argument for that.
Yeah, yeah, and also just to add, Francis getting around 50% ground ball rate.
Okay.
AAA. So, you know, certainly some potential there. And I think, you know, if Pomeranz and Chatwood do need more time, and like I think you explained, Greg, you know, it's certainly, you can make the case that they do, then yeah, like why the hell not? You know, he's a fan favorite. We all love lefties. Why
yeah, and what I was going to mention before was he's a fan favorite who kind of left under sad terms, right? He, didn't I can't remember exactly statistically how well he did in 2010, but I mean obviously he'd lost the previous year to surgery and then kind of came back in mid-season, kind of right around this time, sort of that last season, and I mean he never really got to rejoin into being a regular, you know, part of the Rockies again. He was sort of ineffective and ultimately just sort of kind of went away and. By the time it was time to decline the option year on him, he was already kind of left behind, if you will, in our collective consciousness. So
I think his 2010 numbers look like a perfect picture for the 2012 Rockies, where the ERA is just a lot higher than everything else.
Mm.
So now you're kind of hanging around, like waiting to think, like, oh well, his FIP will, you know, it'll even out, but then like it just never does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess he'll fit in perfectly.
Yeah.
I would like to see Francis back just on the personal level. I mean, you kind of hit it right in the head there, Greg, that he did leave under unfortunate terms, and it was all yeah. sad and tragic. The guy, you know, the horse he rode to the World Series, and, you know, him just kind of, like, drifting away and becoming a ghost because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be nice to at least be able to give him a proper send-off from the Rockies. He'd be like, all right, you suck. This is where we part ways, Jeff Francis.
Well, right, proper send-off. The first word that popped into my mind was proper burial, but I don't think that's quite what we're hoping for.
Not dead yet.
I wonder what his velocity's been.
Everything I've heard, which is not a lot, but could be indicative of what to expect, is that at the very least – he's fully recovered arm strength-wise from that year he had to sit out. So, I mean, maybe that's sort of back to normal, but what is normal, right? Is it around where he was before? Is it slightly below? I don't know.
Well, that's the weird thing, because when he came back in 2010, his fastball was 87 miles an hour, and then with the Royals last season, it was 84, 85.
Oh, my. That's a drop-off, especially when you're supposed to be getting better.
Zito,
Calamberry.
Yeah, pretty much. But I wonder what it is now. I wonder if it's still 85 and he's, you know, just going to be like a junk baller, or if it's 87 and he's going to be a faster junk baller.
85-ish, he gets like the official crafty lefty title because he's old enough to be crafty now and he's lefty enough to be crafty, so yeah.
Yeah, you have to be a certain age to be a crafty lefty.
Oh, yeah. When's the last time you heard of a young, crafty player? Nah, it's always crafty veteran or crafty lefty.
I will concede that it usually is applied more to veteran types who have, like, lost something on their fastball and have to adjust by, like, becoming crafty. But I feel like there are certain pitchers, and I fully admit I can't name one right off the top of my head, but it seems like that...
I tell you what, one guy who, and I don't know what they've written about it, but Tom Malone on the Athletics would be the guy who would be young, but would be a crafty lefty.
Okay, very
interesting.
I don't know anything.
But I don't know if he's been designated that, you know, by the baseball gods or whatever. But
you're only allowed so many crafty players on a 25-man roster, and
it's like an official designation. Yeah, there's a little checkbox, crafty.
Yeah.
And he's just my type. He's crafty.
All right, so I guess.
Anyway, so I am for it. If Pomeranz isn't looking ready and Tyler Chatwood's still Tyler Chatwood, why not? Honestly, just getting somewhere that we know he's going to be out there. Because as much as people want to say, give the innings to the young guy, it's like, well, we're trying to, and they're not taking them. So can you blame them for wanting to get a guy out there who's going to, you know, keep Matt Belisle's arm attached to his shoulder?
Okay. Complete Okay, actually, I should bring this up later because I don't know if you guys still have stuff to say about Francis. Is there anything left on this topic?
He's still
Jeff Francis. We love you.
They were hinting at the in the pregame show today that they expected Francis to sign and start as the TBD slot there. But I mean, you can't read too much into that, so I don't know.
I've also heard start this weekend as well from Rank.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, I didn't hear from him. He didn't like call me like, Andrew, the breaking news.
Right, well, and of course it's also not news yet. It's just people who hear things.
Rank says, everything I'm hearing from sources points to Francis having an agreement in principle with the Rockies. I expect him to start this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, rumor, everything he's heard, this could be nothing.
Well, and okay.
With someone else's.
This show is going up on Friday, so it could already be well and done by then. So, apologies to everyone for the first half of this podcast, which
yes,
may not be relevant anymore.
How silly are we to not take into account time? Fools.
Anyway, the question I was going to ask was, how common is it for a player, and I don't obviously need a specific numerical value or measurement of this, but I assume, because I can't recall the last time I ever saw this, that it is not common for a player at first base to move up on a dropped strike three call.
Not common?
Yeah.
I mean, it happens, but you figure that if it's just a drop strike three, I mean, I don't know.
Well, did the batter run?
The rule is if it's a drop strike three, the batter's out, but and the runner can't advance the first anyways if there's a runner on first. Or are you just saying, speaking specifically as to why they don't, like, sacrifice the second or...
Well, the reason I'm asking is because this thing happened somehow in the Nashville Tourist game yesterday. Christian Adames... I actually described the situation wrong. He wasn't on first. He moved from second to third on this thing. Apparently, somebody dropped the strike. Adames had doubled. The guy ran to first. They threw him out, but Adames moved to third base. It was just a play that struck me as very strange, and I was wondering. I just thought I'd take this opportunity to ask if that really ever happens.
It's the first time there's
often.
Ever been a man on second. It's the first time there's ever been a man on second for a drop strike three in the history of baseball.
I don't believe you.
That's my conclusion.
Okay.
Paul, are you a scientist?
I'm a scientician.
A scientician. I had this Spider-Man comic strip for the newspaper. Newspaper Spider-Man's the best. He's so stupid. But I kept this in my wallet forever, and he was fighting the lizard during this this comic strip arc. And he says, if the lizard's potion contained an acid, maybe I can make the antidote by using a base. And then his little thought bubble says, sure, I'm glad I majored in science. And I'm like, yeah, it gives you lab qualifications and, you know, licensing. Yeah, thank God I majored in science. Exobiology! This potion should help him!
It just seems like there's been a lot of really strange stuff going on in the minors this year.
To your point, my roommate was telling me that, I guess was it Tom Verducci or someone posted this article about how Joey Votto, they're doing like where he's fouled out like into the stands. Did you guys hear about that at all?
Fouled out into the stands, like a player ran into the stands and caught the ball, or
no? Well, like so he, my roommate might have misexplained it or something.
Okay.
But he was basically, what he was telling me was that Joey Votto, I don't know if it was this season or his career, but he's hit exactly one ball into the stands, foul.
I know, I heard about that too.
Wait, what?
It's an oddity.
And everything else, like, I guess, has just been like line drive fouls that like haven't really made the stands or something.
That's really weird.
That doesn't make any sense. You foul a pitch back. Well, I guess you just hit the backstop and doesn't necessarily have to go over the screen.
Well, and it obviously, if this is true, he doesn't hit a lot of balls like that to begin with. Yeah, I have trouble believing that.
Oh, God.
I mean, my roommate was like, guess how many times he's fouled out into the stands? And I was going to guess like a really high number because I was thinking like Wade Boggs was really good at fouling off pitches, you know? And he was an excellent hitter, so... But apparently it's one time. So, In conclusion, my guess about this being the first time there's ever a man on second is probably true. There you go.
That's some crazy logic right there.
Joey Votto has not popped up to the infield all season. In fact, he has popped out of the infield only three times in 2,138 plate appearances over the past four seasons. That makes... Joey Votto has pulled a foul ball into the stands only once in his entire major league career.
Okay, so he's pulled... Once. Okay, yeah, I see that. I assume that doesn't include, you know, random pop-ups straight back or something like that.
Yeah. But let's still, hope though, not. Good Lord, he's popped up four times. Four times? Tulowitzki popped up four times last week.
Before
Tulowitzki.
Yeah.
You know, the last week.
Before he died. Yeah,
exactly. I want Joey Votto. It's not fair.
Trade all the young arms.
Yo, speaking of this, I had a dream the other, like, a couple nights ago that we signed Zach Greinke.
That's especially funny because of your history with that topic.
I know. It's like, apparently, like, we talked about this on a podcast a while back, and my you know, the recesses of my unconscious are still, like, you know, firing on all cylinders with this. So that was excellent.
Great for you.
All right, where were we before this happened?
I was just talking about weird minor league stuff, because, like, as I was writing the Pebble Report last night, I saw that weird tidbit. And then also there was the weird AAA game where Rob Scahill gave up – well, okay, it wasn't just Scahill, but the Sky Sox lost last night 9-5. And
the 9 runs.
Yeah, they scored all 9 of their runs in one inning.
Stupid.
Wow.
I think there was a spring training game a couple of years back. It was the Rays against the Yankees. And I think the Rays won like 10-0, and there was just like 10 runs that they put up in the fifth inning, and that was the scoring for the whole game.
Yeah, that reminds me of I'll see if Andrew remembers. Do you remember the spring training game a couple of years ago where you got in trouble for making fun of Chris Malone?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well that was a game we were winning for like the entire time, and of course the nature of spring training. Oh, we ran out of pitchers. Bring up the kid from minor league camp.
Yeah,
that day happened to be Chris Malone, and
Malone and Adam Jorgensen, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, we were up like 6-2, and then
they gave up the game.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like everyone was really mad at them, and it's like, good Lord, like it's practice. It's practice with players who are never going to be on our team.
I called Chris Malone Carl Malone, and I referred to Adam Jorgensen as a neighborhood pizza delivery boy who was in the neighborhood.
Adam Jorgensen,
were you yelling this at
bounce back season, by the way, guys.
I wrote this in a gamer app, and some guy just got really upset about it. Like, really upset about it. I'm like, sorry, dude. I mean, we're making fun of them, sure. He's like, you know, they're going to probably read that and go home and have to think about that all night. I think they're going to go back to their hotel room and be happy about the game they just had. No, I don't really care either. Like, what the hell's your point? I mean, this is kind of the burden you assume when you become a professional athlete is ridicule.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's okay to make snotty tweets at Jeremy Guthrie now. That's what you're saying.
Well, it's not okay. You open yourself up to it by having a freaking Twitter account, but it's mean.
Not classy.
Yeah, we get in trouble for, or at least I got in trouble for a similar thing on the early days of this podcast when we talked about the non-roster invitees from 2010, which included Mike Polk, who I'd never heard of before, and I said I've never heard of him before, and some guy was like, you're going to make him cry, and I'm like, oh God, I was just being honest. I don't know who this guy is. It wasn't an insult. I don't know who he is.
I mean, at least you didn't call him a no-namer.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that was like the impression I gave off, but literally I was not saying this guy will never amount to anything. It was just, I have not heard of this human being before.
I bet if Mike...
Joke, silly people.
If Mike Polk said he's never heard of Greg Stanwood, this guy wouldn't have said a thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
double standard. Double standard.
We're famous podcasters. And as much as that's silly, he was like what, like a low A ball player at that time? That's just about as famous as a podcaster. I feel like it's the same like level of achievement.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, me neither. I know. I just we're even talking about it's like minor league ball and like podcast and like, you know, I feel like there's an analog from you know, like real like radio or television broadcasting for a flagship and then what we do and being a major league pitcher and being an A-ball pitcher.
Yeah, the point of the story is you don't want to the point of this is that you don't want to be identifying as either.
Jerry Guthrie, I have strong personal feelings about your performance in a baseball game. Ah.
By the way, Adam, what I was trying to say before was that Adam Jorgensen is having a pretty good bounce back season.
Yeah, he was awful last year.
Yeah, he completely fell off the map.
Well, he was closing for the Drillers, wasn't he?
He was. He was just coming off. He was like the last player selected to go to the Arizona Fall League the previous season. So the team was obviously interested in him. And then, like, I mean, it was bad. He had no control. And, it ended up – I mean, he went to, like, extended spring training and then came back and then got hurt and then, like, was never effective again. And then this season they started him off and extended again. And – he had just kind of faded from my mind, and now he's closing one level lower from Modesto.
He's been nasty, though.
I wonder if me mocking a pitcher is, or any player in the minor leagues, is what makes them have a bounce back.
Did you mock Friedrich?
Probably.
Even if Andrew didn't, a lot of other people did.
Well, if that were the case, every single minor leaguer ever would have a great bounce back.
I guess.
Because every minor leaguer, someone thinks they suck and someone thinks they're great and they shot for the majors.
Brett Thanos.
I'm not saying that he's gone. I'm just saying that somebody out there is like, Brett Thanos, you're my hero. I'll see you up in the Colorado Rockies. And, you know.
Is that the Drew Pomeranz voice?
It is the Drew Pomeranz.
It's the same girl. She loves watching her some minor league baseball.
Oh, there it is. I hope you're recording this, Greg. It's too good.
We're doing a podcast. The recording is kind of an important part.
Also, I know we don't typically talk about the Rockies games that are going on currently, but Outman just lasted 3 innings in this game, which then, of course, bolsters the case for
Guillermo Moscoso doing his job.
Yeah, that. Basically, it's Jeff Francis, we need you.
Wait. I'm up in my room. The game's on downstairs. How many runs did he give up?
5.
Oh, my God. I remember how excited and optimistic we were because a pitcher did okay.
Once.
Yeah, for 3 innings. It's like we realized that this guy was, like, bad in Oakland, too, right? Okay, just making sure.
Well, and also hurt a lot.
That too, but
that was all anybody ever talked about when we acquired him. Josh Outman was hurt for a long time, which is true. In fact, he has like so much service time; it's ridiculous. He's gotten into like 40 games or something, and he already is almost arbitration eligible.
Wow.
Yes. In fact, he will be arbitration eligible after the season. That's non-tender category right there.
Yeah, we got a. Our pitching sucks, guys. Honestly, for as much fun as it is having, you know, the badge do anything, except for Marco Scudero, who's old and dogging it and doesn't care, apparently. We had a very excitable user say that, if you guys weren't aware.
A very excitable user. Okay.
That's right. He's like, how could you not see it? It's like, what's your proof that he's like the worst dogging it player on the team? Your eyes. Just look at him. It's like, yeah, I definitely see one of the hardest working players in Major League Baseball dogging it and being old. Yeah. Anyways, despite the fact that it's fun watching the offense score, you know, 6 to 11 runs in the wins, it feels like it's wasted when the pitching's really bad.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're already almost at 30 minutes here. Do we have anything we want to talk about regarding the first-year player draft we got
draft.
Through? Yeah.
For the draft.
Let's talk about the draft.
I'm glad we didn't pick up Hawkins. I mean, he looked intriguing, but I could see the organization not picking up a potential super high strikeout guy.
The best thing about Hawkins is he almost killed himself after being drafted.
Really?
Yeah, were you watching the draft footage at all, the feed?
Oh, no, I was
not at that point.
Well, okay, so basically they're trying to, make it into a more televisual event, right? They have, like, all the draftees they can get there, all the potential first-round guys, like, sitting in a crowd, and, like, they walk up when they're drafted, and they present them with a uniform and a hat, and it's oh so cute and so forth. Well, when Courtney Hawkins was drafted, he ran up to the stage and did a backflip.
Really?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, like, I mean, he landed the backflip, so there wasn't like a scary moment where he like literally almost broke his arm. But can, I mean, you have to imagine that like the White Sox scouting table like just had heart attacks at that moment.
How does that work if the guy like does that and injures himself severely? Like he lands on his shoulder.
It's like we've only had him as a member of our team for 5 seconds. Can we make another pick?
Mulligan? Yeah. Like, 5 second rule, right?
Portland, the Portland Trail Blazers would like to exercise that clause if at all possible.
Oh man, would they ever?
You see, Greg, there's a player named Greg Oden, and he's supposed to be super duper awesome, and he cannot stay healthy because his knees are just the worst things on the planet. And it's tragic.
And what sport is this?
Basketball.
Okay, so this is the basketball equivalent of Hector Gomez.
Worse.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
wasn't he your first overall pick, Odin?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's worse.
He was supposed to be like, you know, maybe not a Kobe or a Shaq, but, you know, a solid, contributing, dangerous, you know, top three guys in your team force, and his knees just kind of are the worst. They're made out of, you know, Fabergé egg or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you didn't, you're happy we didn't go with Hawkins. Do you like Dahl, or do you think we should, like some, we should have gone for, oh God, his name's going to escape me, the pitcher that
Giolito?
Washington. Yeah, Giolito, or Giolito, yeah. Whatever.
Well,
that guy.
I didn't really want to take the risk on the injury-prone pitcher because I'm probably in the same boat as the front offices, and I'm awfully tired of our first-round pick pitchers being constantly hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's 3 years in a row where you had that between Reynolds, Friedrich, and Weathers.
Well, and Bettis wasn't our first actual pick, but he was the top pitcher of that round, and now he's going through that. So, yeah.
But so I think like Courtney Hawkins embodies their position player failures a lot. All or nothing swings, not necessarily going to be good contact hitters, impatient, holes in the swing, stuff like that. And then the pit Giolito represented, you know, the broken pitchers we're sick of having with all that upside. Well, I guess we haven't really had that many super upside pitchers, but the point kind of stands. It's like, nah, if there's something in the water, we'd rather have a more durable guy. And so with Dahl, it sounds like his hitting profile, like he's going to have to develop into power, but he's going to be a decent, you know, average gap hitter. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of guy the Rockies have, you know, are drooling over in someone like Arenado or possibly Josh Rutledge is more contact gappers who'll use ball, you know, the entire field rather than, you know, guys swinging from their heels to try to pound one over the fence.
Gotcha. I know none of us are really super experts on the actual draft, but are there any picks, positive or negative, that stand out to either of you at all?
Well, Evan Longoria was on the board, and you mean in this draft?
Yes.
No, I honestly, and I hate to expose, you know, the areas I don't really follow that well, but like I would just be reading right off of David Ono's articles, and to anyone else, and so honestly, I don't have enough time to follow preps and NCAA, so I'll be happy to defer to anyone else who has a player to mention.
Well,
I was going to say, you know, something that Greg and I were talking about before the podcast, and again, I'm kind of in a similar boat where I don't have a whole lot substantial to say about, like, any of these prospects, particularly, like, the guys who were after the Rockies, you know, were going to pick, like, those names getting thrown around. But I was telling Greg before this that if you look at this from, like, a process versus outcome, you know, type of dichotomy, I do like the process a lot. It's obviously too early to know about the outcome. But having said that, you never know if a draft is good, but you could always walk away knowing the draft was bad. And so in that sense, there hasn't been a bad outcome from this. And Greg and I were talking, we did like the process. It seems like they had a strategy. It seems like they kind of knew what they were doing, especially, you know, in light of the new collective bargaining agreement stipulations. So overall, I'm pretty happy with it. Of course, it remains to be seen how it'll turn out. But, you know, I don't think there were really bad picks or anything regrets.
The feedback that I've read that was more general is that the Rockies did a good job of keeping a balanced draft. You had a lot of the people or the teams who were drafting high having to draft low. And under the new CBA where there's the slotting and where you have limits on how much you can pay who you draft, you have to really pay much closer attention to how you compensate for players that might sort of mess up the smoothness of that process. And I feel like it seemed to me that people were pretty thrilled with the way that the Rockies sort of kept steady and like didn't really wobble the scales at all in this sense. Everyone they picked seemed to make sense that for the point that they were picked. They didn't do too many reaches or too many emergency diversions because course corrections, if you will, after drafting one player. Oh, we have to go this way now. And obviously the other positive is that the types of players that we got are pretty diverse in terms of where they play, where they came from, age, range, that sort of thing. Short on left-handed pitchers, as I was saying, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
You might have picked up, two lefties, I think, in this draft?
Two left-handed pitchers in the draft, yeah.
So what was a penalty for going over slot this year? This is what I don't remember.
Okay, so the way it works, I think, is that you could basically go over slot, and this is for you, your first 10 rounds worth, I think. You could go over slot, 5%, or up to 5%, and at that point, you're taxed an additional, 75% on that, right? So if the 5% was $100,000, you have to pay an additional $75,000.
Well, this is what's funny then, because you hear Scott Boras is complaining about the fact that his client didn't go first overall, he ostensibly should have.
This is Appel, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Appel, and then you had Correa going first overall instead, and he's livid about it because it's like, well, dude, they can only go so far over slot, and what I'm expecting you're asking for here would impose such a huge penalty on the team that you're not only making the team pay more for your guy, but you're making the team pay more, to everybody else for the tax as well.
Mm. You know, it's so great. It's so great for them too, because if you think about it, first of all, a lot of people I think had was it Correa? Is that who it is?
Yeah,
they
had
him as the best overall guy. You know, like, maybe Appel was safer or closer or this and that, and he has potential in his own right. But a lot of people had Correa as the best overall guy. And then what do you know? He goes first. But then on top of that, he's looking to get a $4 or $5 million signing bonus, which is, a hefty signing bonus. But that still is $2 to $3 million under their slot, which means they have that money freed up to use in later rounds. So the Astros, I think for a maligned organization like them, they're really righting the ship.
Pretty shrewd move there. I think the concern about this is that we have these ridiculous penalties on going too far over slot. We're going to end up in kind of an NFL situation where teams almost don't want the first overall pick, because despite how good they might be, the first overall pick in the draft was just costing so much money that teams are like, screw it. We'll skip on getting the superstar guy because we're not going to give him $36 million without having him seen him throw a football in the NFL. And similarly, you want us to give the 17-year-old kid, a zillion, $12 million or do something stupid once you account for the fact they had to pay extra on top of that for the tax or whatever. It just – you're not – the Pirates aren't going to pony that kind of money up. Are you kidding me? I mean, teams like that are not going to do this, and you're going to have to find – weirder ways of imposing, or either bump the slots up or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's problems.
I mean, financially, I don't know the situation particularly well, but I know that this was going to create some other problems based upon other sorts of incentives, like being added immediately to a major league contract, for example, which is why they banned teams doing that now in future drafts. That's one detail that sort of kind of got ignored, was that we had, for example, Strasburg and Harper were both signed to major league contracts by the Nationals when they signed, and they can't do that anymore. So obviously they're sort of trying to make the money that is paid as part of the signing as the sort of currency here, rather than finding other ways to reward high draft picks.
I mean, the one thing, I think, well, so first of all, I'm happy that the draft didn't seem to be this horrible death sentence type of a thing that people were kind of, you know, talking about it as being this new collective bargaining agreement. I think the draft went kind of well. My one concern going forward, though, is that with these higher slot brackets now, like, every year into the future, we get further away from having these previous reference points. So I just kind of think that it's only a matter of time until draft picks are just maxing out at their slot, and, like, that's it. Does that make sense?
So they're always sort of just on pace, like there's just sort of a default, oh.
Where, yeah, because if you think about it, like,
you get slot and we don't need to do any negotiating, it's just implied.
Well, and it's like, if you think about it too, like, in the old system, the slot didn't really matter, it didn't mean anything, so at this point, like, there was a real game of, you know, both parties trying to be, like, objective, you know, I put that in quotes, but as objective as they can be, and then kind of finding the middle there.
Right,
about, and, like, and this person's skill set and their, like, proximity to the majors and, like, their position in the draft and this and that. And, like, they, because there were no sort of restrictions or any sort of, you know, numbering. This is, in psychology, we just call it anchoring, where now the first pick is just, like, you always kind of come in anchored at this $7 million value because now you're forced to look at it so much closer or closely. So I think in the future, when negotiating, you know, kind of becomes more aggressive, we move further away from these, you know, unrestricted types of signing bonuses, that at some point, every year it's going to be a little bit more, and the guy who goes first next year is going to want that plus another 500,000, you know, 600,000. So I think at some point it's going to get a little bit uglier, although I could be wrong.
It kind of, the way you're describing kind of reminds me of the arbitration process and how every arbitration case where, you know, really good young player is going to want what the last really young player got plus more.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, are these hard slots now? Are they going to adjust for inflation? Because that's a legitimate argument you can make on the player end, too, where, like, you know, if it's, like, 5 years down the line, like, maybe I am the exact same player as Carlos Correa, but at this point it's 5 years later, so are we adjusting for that? And has the slot adjusted, too? You know, but again, to your credit, I do think it'll just be a more simplistic way of, like, the guy who goes first next year is going to be like, okay, well, I'm the first overall pick. I'm just as good, so I want that money plus an extra X amount, you know?
The way I see it, either they're going to have to lower the slots or they're going to have to eventually start allowing for trading in draft picks, which doesn't make much sense. But, like, you know, if you're stuck in that giant slot for the first round, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. All right, anybody got anything else?
Favorite names of the draft?
Carell Prime.
Carell Prime? Andrew? Yes. Do you have one?
Well, it's not really that most funny, but whenever you're Courtney Hawkins, all I can just hear is all the CU fans somewhere going, what? No! Oh, wait. Different Hawkins.
My favorite? I don't know. I mean, you kind of took Carell Prime. That's like, he's like the first... He's the first round pick of our draft for good names.
Uh-huh.
Although I do like Trent Blank now. Trent Blank.
Trent, yeah, Trent is such like a non-blank name, and then you have
Trent
Blank.
Blank. That's like you were like a singer or like an old punk band or something, and you had to give yourself this like goofy last name, Trent Blank.
And I mean obviously
or Trent Reznor.
Obviously that opens the door for his name to just be Trent. So he'll be like the next Ichiro and just get Trent on the back.
Trent or like Trent and then like a couple underscores.
he gets to pick his last name every game.
Yeah,
people are like, who's Johnson? Yeah.
Kieran Lovegrove, Onelkis Garcia, Damian Magnifico. There we go.
Magnifico was drafted a couple of years ago as well, I believe.
Yeah, these are all the intriguing draft picks in the second round on MLB Baseball Nation. There's a lot of great Jamodrick McGrunder.
If we're going outside of the Rockies draft, then it's definitely Will Hurt. I can't get over that name, Will Hurt. It's so perfect.
Oh,
do you think he goes by like Bill or something just to try to like deflect?
Or like William Hurt the actor just stays William Hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are always a couple others that show up randomly in the draft, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. I still think Michael Monster is my favorite all time.
That's a great one.
Sky
Bolt.
That's right. There was a Sky Bolt in this
Sky
one.
Sky Bolt, and his school is like the Holy Innocents.
Oh,
it's
wow.
The most like intense like Sky Bolt from the Holy Innocents. It's perfect.
I still liked it when we first heard the name Lance Broadway entered professional baseball. Lance Broadway.
There it is. There it is. I missed that. It's been too long since you've done that, Andrew.
Well, it's been too long since we've talked about Lance Broadway.
Say Drew Pomeranz.
Y'all gotta go from Lance Broadway to, oh man, I gotta get the falsetto now. I can't just do it on the cue, man.
Okay, don't worry about it. I just was... Drew Pomeranz is not an especially funny name, but it is when you say it.
Well, this it sounds so forced. You don't want a non-organic Drew Pomeranz for me.
That's true.
No, that
I would never.
That is.
Like, hey, like you need a guy with a drum set to give me the full rim shot. Dun-tsh.
All right. Well,
let's end the show.
I think that covers everything.
End.
Yes, I'm working on it, guys. We're almost
end.
There.
End.
I think he left.
We'll see you next week. Take care.